News Talk 1620 WTAW. If you have questions, questions at WTAW.com. You can call or text at 979-695-1620. I know you want to go back to the veterans. I think we got some more information on that.
Right. For the person that called in and asked about the veterans health benefits, I did check. The Veterans Choice Act extension that that the president just signed yesterday was exactly the same as the one we passed in the last Congress, except that it also has a provision to improve the communications protocol between the Veterans Administration and some of our private healthcare providers. Apparently there had been some challenges, but in terms of the way the VA was communicating with them, and so the patients were not getting the care they needed as quickly as possible. So that has been fixed. Also, I did find out that we're working on Veterans Choice Act 2.0. Which is, I didn't realize that was coming that quickly. I'm not on the Veterans Affairs Committee anymore. Apparently that is being led by Phil Rowe, who's the chairman of that committee now. And so hopefully by the end of this Congress, we'll see actual enhancements to that program to make it work even better.
Email from Jacob in Waco. What are you doing to represent those interests in your district, the 40% who do not agree with the Republican congressional platform? What concessions are you willing to make to reach bipartisan agreements on health care, immigration, and reform?
Well, let me say this. My job as representative is to try to represent them, to try to vote in Congress to the same way that the biggest number of people, the biggest number of our constituents would vote. So if I pull this voting card out and gave it back to the constituents on it, how would they vote in the aggregate? And so I get it right for the bulk of that population most of the time. But there are some people who ideologically don't align with the center of gravity in this district. This is a center-right district. There are areas where we disagree. But there are areas where we agree. I think based on my conversations with the more left-leaning parts of this district, and I don't mean that pejoratively, we agree on how to deal with the folks who are here illegally. We agree on how to deal with the Dreamers. We agree generally we don't want to build a wall across all of Texas. We agree on those things. We agree that basic research funding is a good place to spend federal tax dollars. What I'd ask them to do is not, you know, not think that just because I disagree with them on some issues that I don't agree with them on everything, because there are some areas where we're common. And so I hope they'll support that. So I know they're probably never going to vote for me, and that's okay. I understand that. But still, I do represent them. I do try to get some of those things right that they want.
Donald Trump has obviously brought us new things to the presidency that we didn't think we'd see. And there's some problems that go along with that. The president's spending a lot of tax dollars on weekend trips to Mar-a-Lago.
Right.
You have stated you didn't know how much each trip would cost him in your town hall earlier this week, but you would look into it and you would talk to President Trump if the costs seem out of line. Will you really discuss this with the president?
We really will. And look, I'm not the only one. I'm just when I was driving back today, I was listening to a talk show, and Joni Ernst, senator from Iowa, is asking the same question as well. So, look, I'm a conservative. I'm a fiscal hawk, and I believe that it's inappropriate to be spending taxpayer dollars to do that every weekend. Look, we've got a presidential retreat at Camp David. It's convenient. It's a whole lot less expensive. It's secure. It's easy to secure. But when you're trying to go to a place like Mar-a-Lago, that is hard to secure. I mean, President Bush, when he'd go to Crawford every weekend, was not nearly this expensive. So I agree with the callers that are raising concerns about that, and we will have that conversation. And the good thing, like I said at the very, very beginning of this call, we've got this robust Office of Congressional Relations in the White House that makes that easy to do.
In February, this is from Stephanie in Austin, in February, you voted with other Republicans to block a resolution that would have required President Trump to share his tax returns with Congress. Why shouldn't Congress and the American people know what Trump's business holdings are so that we can know where conflicts might exist?
Let me say this. If there was a law that required public officials to produce their tax returns, I would have voted to compel the president to produce his tax returns. But the fact of the matter is there is no such law. So I'm not going to vote to force the president to do something that's not in the law today. And so for people that wonder what the president's business interests are, he has filed his ethics reports. He filed them as a candidate. He's filed them as an elected official. People need to go find those. They're available. They're publicly available information. If you know what he's, where he's wanting to invest his money and what kind of money he makes, go look at those. But producing a tax return, I'm not going to ask for that.
Well, then let's talk about these other things, because he is in so many businesses all over the world. Certainly, we've never had anybody like this who has invested literally in so many different things mm-hmm. that a conflict of interest would almost seem impossible to keep from happening. So where should Congress go? How much time and energy should be spent? And where is a justifiable point for you to stop and say, no, we don't have to look beyond this?
Technically, under the Constitution and the law, there is no conflict of interest provision for a president.
Can we really believe that?
No, I'm just saying right. that they – let me re-express that.
Okay.
They're basically exempt from any sort of conflict of interest provisions in the law.
But we've never had a billionaire businessman.
We've never had a situation like this. Right. We may have to reevaluate this over time, but that's going to take some time to do. But at this point in time, if people want to know where he's invested his money and what his income is from those investments, they ought to go to his current ethics filings, which he filed pursuant to the law.
This is from Katrina.
Just like the rest of us is elected officials have.
This is Katrina from Bryan. Reducing the overall abortion rate is a common goal that Republicans and Democrats share. However, Republican policies have been shown to increase abortion rates as well as hurting and ruining women's lives. Why do you refuse to support policies that have been shown to work?
I have never heard that metric before, that reducing abortion causes abortion to go. That logic doesn't. I just don't understand the logic. But let me say this. Abortion stops a beating heart. And I will never support the aborting a child, except in the case of rape or incest or life of the mother. Those are the only exceptions I can see. But I will never vote for anything, and I will never, ever vote to use taxpayer dollars to stop a beating heart. And that's just period, end of story. And people say, well, you're hurting women's health. No, I'm not. I'm not doing that. I mean, is there an exception for women's health? I mean, if for life of the mother. People say, well, you're interfering with women's right to choose. No, I'm not. No woman has the right to choose to kill their child. That people say that's a woman's body. No, it's a separate body within the woman's body. It's got its own DNA. It's a separate being. And I will never vote to allow that to be killed.
Texas is third in the country in the number of pregnant teens, ages 15 to 19. Where do you suggest we send these young teens for their birth control needs so that these unwanted pregnancies do not occur at this rate?
I think what there's probably a preface to the question, and that is voting against Planned Parenthood funding. I will never support funding Planned Parenthood with taxpayer dollars. For every Planned Parenthood clinic in this country, there are 15 community health centers that provide real, comprehensive, full-spectrum health care for women and for children. We've got a great one here in the Brazos Valley. We've got a great one up in McLennan County. We've got a great one over in Austin. And we've got some smaller ones in some of our rural counties. And if a teen has a situation where they want birth control and they want it for free or reduced prices, that's where they can go to get it. They don't have to go to Planned Parenthood to get that. And when they do that, they'll get full-spectrum health care at the same time, which you cannot get from Planned Parenthood.
Let's go to a caller. This is Christy from Groesbeck. Christy?
My question would be what his stance is as far as with the president concerned about the air traffic control privatization and how that he thinks is going to affect national security with our national airspace system.
Okay. Christy, thank you for the question. A lot of people don't know this, but I'm also a general aviation pilot, and I have 2,500 hours. I'm an instrument-rated pilot. I have strong reservations about privatizing the nation's air traffic control system. This isn't like privatizing garbage pickup. Our nation's airspace is a unique national asset, a unique national resource. It's shared by commercial airliners. It's shared by our military. It's shared by search and rescue, Coast Guard. It's shared with general aviation folks like me that I don't fly anymore, but when I did. And so that should never be turned over to a private corporation, particularly one that's dominated by the airlines. Now, the reason privatization has been recommended by presidents going all the way back to Reagan, I think, is that because the FAA has struggled to implement something called next generation air traffic control. And the primary reason it struggled is, one, because of FAA bureaucracy, and two, because the funding was on again, off again from Congress. So the FAA part of that problem has been more or less solved through the reorganization of the FAA over years. And so the funding for next gen needs to be completed. And so what I propose to do to get next gen finished and take this privatization talk off the table forever is to go ahead and include the cost of next gen in an infrastructure bill. Because if you think about it, our nation's airspace is part of infrastructure for commerce. And so I think it'd be a good investment to go ahead and put it in an infrastructure bill, get it built out, and move on down the road. And so I will vote no against privatization. And actually, it's not widely known, but I helped kill the privatization in the last Congress because I went head-to-head against the chairman of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee and said, as the chair of the Republican Study Committee, I will never allow you to bring that to the floor. And it died. And so I will continue to do that in the future. We just don't want to turn that over to a private corporation.
As we continue to try to make our tax dollars go farther, we have discussions here in Brazos County. We have them in Austin. And now I'm starting to hear a few in Washington about private-public partnerships.
Correct.
Where are you comfortable with that? Where do you think that could be a real boon?
Well, let me say this. That continues on the infrastructure discussion we were just having. You know, when we as the Republicans in the House were running, we were running under what we call a better way. The president was running under an agenda called Make America Great Again. Six of the elements of those two plans were the same, but the president had a seventh called infrastructure. And the president proposed spending $1 trillion on the nation's infrastructure. I sort of gasped about that when he did it because I was thinking there's just no way. We don't have $1 trillion taxpayer dollars to spend. And so as we've worked with the White House on this, what we're proposing is a little bit of federal seed money and then to change the things that have caused infrastructure investments to slow down, overreaching regulations, multiple agencies looking at things at the same project from multiple angles. And so what we're proposing to do is have a $1 trillion infrastructure program with just a little bit of federal money and then with some government guaranteed funding ability for state and local governments or from private parties to invest in this. Now, infrastructure for this infrastructure historically has always been anything that had to do with concrete and steel. So bridges, roads, ports, canals, things like that. What we're talking about in terms of infrastructure in this package is rural broadband so that we can bring our rural communities into the 21st century and give them the ability to attract the businesses that move to our larger cities. We're talking about air traffic control, next gen for air traffic control, plus the traditional infrastructure. Also things like how to roll out 5G more quickly, 5G cellular. That could be, right now there's a dispute between companies about where they can hang their receivers on people that have poles. Well, we can change the regulations about how that's done. And so suddenly you can eliminate a big cost and a time lag this inhibiting the rollout of 5G cellular. So that's what we're talking about in terms of infrastructure.
I didn't hear you say high-speed rail.
Well, no, but the high-speed rail, if they want to do it, it has to be privately funded. I don't see a role for taxpayer funding of high-speed rail.
Okay. While we're talking about communications, you voted to reverse an FCC privacy rule that would have prevented companies from buying our browsing history. Why did you vote for it? And what can Texans do to protect their privacy? Follow up, did the $45,000 donation you received from telecom companies influence your decision?
Oh, I read somewhere it was $83,000 or something. I get supported by every industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, the national air traffic controllers support me, and I'm not always on the same page with them.
Sure.
So, but the bulk of my my campaign contributions come from individuals here in Texas. So anyway, this is a little bit of a complex answer. Prior to 2015, the internet was largely unregulated. And so that unregulated structure of the internet allowed it to blossom over the last three decades and has really transformed our country. Not only how we communicate, how we do business, how we buy things, how we ship. I mean, it's just touched almost every, how we educate. It's changed almost every aspect of our lives. And it did it. The reason it worked is because it was in a fairly unregulated ecosystem. What Chairman Wheeler did in the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, back in 2015, he decided he wanted to implement a rule called net neutrality. So he basically said, okay, Internet, you've been wild and woolly too long, so we're going to take you and we're going to regulate you under the Communications Act from the 30s, and we're going to regulate you like the old wireline mall bells. And we in Congress said, hey, dude, you don't have the authority to do that. But he did it anyway, and that's kind of the way the regulators worked in the over the course of the last 8 years. Well, the privacy in the Internet, before that, had always been regulated by the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. So it oversaw privacy, consumer privacy, and it did a pretty good job of it. And so what Wheeler did when he decided to implement this net neutrality rule is he basically screwed up the relationship of the Federal Trade Commission being able to regulate Internet privacy. So then when the FCC said, oh man, we messed up, so we got to pass this new rule. And so they rolled out a rule in October of last year that dealt only with Internet service providers. It left all the edge providers like the Yahoos and the AOLs and the Googles and all those people untouched. That's not right. And so it came up with this arbitrary privacy rule that it hadn't even gone to effect when we decided to stop it, and they would never have had to do that if they hadn't screwed it up in the first place. So we just said, time out, stop. That rule's not going to go into effect because you don't have the legal authority to do it. The FCC does have some limited authority under Sections 201, 202 of the Communications Act to regulate privacy, but they can't do it with this rule. So what we are doing now in the Communications and Technologies Subcommittee of Energy Commerce, and I'm a member of that, and actually I'm one of the leaders on this team, is to find a way to deal with privacy. But we're going to do it across everything from Amazon to the ISPs. And so we're going to do that. But right, and we're going to try to find a way to get it back under the auspices of the Federal Trade Commission.
So am I hearing now that they really do not have access to this information?
They don't.
All right.
No, I mean, theoretically, they could have sold it all along, but they would have been subject to the FTC slapping their hand. And in my view of the world, I think the FTC is still looking at slapping their hand if they do it, although Wheeler did screw this up badly. The good news is we got a great chairman now, Pai. And he's
been in our studio.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah. He's friends with your boss, Ben Downs.
As a matter of fact.
Yeah. Actually, he's a great guy. And he's thinking about rolling back net neutrality. If he does that, then that sort of fixes this. At the same time, I think we in Congress need to come up with a privacy solution that's friendly to the Internet ecosystem, protects the consumers, but yet doesn't inhibit the growth. And let me say this. I don't want my data sold to anybody. And I know nobody else that a constituent wants it sold, and I will do all I can to keep that from happening unless somebody specifically opts in to have it sold. And so that's where we're headed.
The media created a metric of the first 100 days for any president, and they want that to be a benchmark and what has been accomplished. Well, it looks like we're coming up on 100 days where there won't be any major legislation passed in this Trump presidency. Is it fair to do that? Are there some high points that you think your president has been able to accomplish things in the first 100 days?
Yes, I do. Let me say this. We haven't gotten everything done the first 100 days I'd hoped we'd do. But if you look at what we've done on the regulatory front, what the president's done and what Congress has done through the passage of Congressional Review Act resolutions, it's been remarkable. We've changed the face of the regulatory regime in Washington, and it's much more of a proper balance between growth and protection. So that is remarkably different. Our national security, our president recognizes the importance of national security, and it's being recognized all over the world. We say what we mean, and we mean what we say. And if you cross us, we're going to thump you, and we'll have the military might to do it. And, I mean, look at border security. Look, border crossings are way, way, way down because the president means what he says. And so in those areas, we've done really well, and we've just gotten started. The area where I'm the most disappointed is in health care. I had really hoped to have a health care reform solution in place that was based on repeal and then with the replacement provisions. I wanted to do it in two separate steps, but because of that other group, we combined them. I still hope we get that done. But that's the only kind of the missing link. Everything else is on track. Tax reform is on track for this summer. Infrastructure is on track for after that. An energy bill beyond that. Poverty probably sometime next year. So except for the healthcare deal, I think we're doing okay. Now, have we had some misfire? Well, let me rephrase that. The president's had some misfires. The rollout of the first refugee executive order was a disaster. And so the next one, we've got to get that cleared up with the courts, but that's going to work itself out. He's done some things with respect to, trying to insist on a wall that bothers me a little bit. And some of his tweets have not been necessary. And there seems to be distraction with the whole Russian mess. But other than healthcare, I think the first 100 days is not in bad shape.
Jason Chavis says he's not going to run again.
I know. I was disappointed to hear that.
Surprised?
I was. That really caught me off guard when I read that announcement. And also, I read today that he may go ahead and leave Congress early. So that...
What happened?
I don't know.
You have to start feeling suspicious
Let me say this, and I'm going to kind of bare my soul a little bit here. I worry about how governable this country is today. The country is exceptionally polarized. And people complain about how Congress is polarized, but Congress is polarized because the population is polarized. And so he may have just decided, maybe I just don't think it's governable anymore, and I want to go do something else. I worry about the future of our country and our kids because people spend so damn much time fighting with each other right now. And that just bothers the heck out of me. I look at people that just, look at the graffiti they're smearing all over my social media every day. Why are you doing that? What are you accomplishing by doing that? I don't do that to them. And so why are we fighting with each other? And look, the right's as bad. The alt-right's just as bad as the far left. Mm-hmm. Why does some publications decide, it's more fun to attack Republicans than to do anything productive in life?
Still the greatest country in the world, even though we're having these problems here.
I think so too. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want you to spend a minute because there's been a shooting in Paris. It's killed one. That's tonight, and that's the last few hours. And they're thinking that has the profile of terrorism. We've got Kim Jong-un, who was looking like he's going to put together a bomb that got the Chinese on alert.
Good.
And the president said that there was a ship steaming into that area, and they're not, and that's got the Chinese mad at him this afternoon. So where are we on these foreign hotspots right now?
Well, let me say this. Europe is going to struggle with terrorism for quite a while. They had a lax refugee, a lax approach to dealing with refugees, and they didn't, and their approach did not involve inculcating the refugees into their culture. We do a much better job of that in this country. Plus, we don't have the volume of refugees that Europe had. So they're going to struggle with that for a while until they figure out the direction they're going to move as a society. It's late. We're going to have to hold him in check. And I thought the president had done a pretty good job of getting the Chinese to get involved and to begin to check him a little bit. And then I don't know what's happened with this whole sending. We're going to send an armada over to Asia.
He said he had a ship steaming there, and he has it. In this evening, he was attacked in the Chinese media for that.
Yeah, and I'm not – well, first of all, I think we should project our might in the area, not to go over there and start going kinetic and shooting, but just to let everybody know, hey, we're in the neighborhood. So if you do anything wrong, you might find something coming back at you. Yeah. And so I think that's perfectly appropriate. But the Chinese need to think about this. If they want to be a world player, and they talk like they want to be a world player, then they need to get their little brother next door to shape up.
I've used up 89 minutes of your time, so I want to give you 1 minute. Is there something you want to share with your constituents while we have a minute left?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, and I want to thank Brian Broadcasting and WTAW for hosting this tonight. I think it was very very informative to our constituents, and I know I enjoy talking about these things in this format. We still have a great country. We have our challenges, and so I'd ask our listeners to continue praying for it. Pray for our military men and women. Pray for our veterans who have served for our country, and pray for our first responders who protect us here at home, so we can have a conversation like this in peace and quiet tonight.
We got to act calm, cool, and collected while Andrew and Tucker and Brad and Chelsea were working hard back in the studio along with Dusty. Thank you for doing that, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Good night.